On this episode of Risk, you'll hear...
And there was this enormous police officer, tactical gear with a long gun pointed in my direction.
And you'll hear...
It's against FAA regulations. Are you out of your fucking mind?
And me, Kevin Allison, on the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
The internet is coaching our kids. When boys hear that on repeat, it shapes how they see themselves. We can't leave it to those voices. We have to be louder, together.
With EE,
we need to coach them, guide them, back them.
Building our boys up every chance we get.
Be yourself.
Back your mates. Confidence comes from within.
As proud partner of the England teams, EE has support and guidance to help build all our boys up, on and off the pitch. Search EE Yes Boys.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Hey, do you have trouble sleeping? Then maybe you should check out the Sleepy Podcast. It's a show where I read old books in the public domain to help you get to sleep. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. Classic stories like A Tale of Two Cities, Pride and Prejudice, Winnie the Pooh. Stories that are great for kids and adults alike. So whether you have a tough time snoozing or just like a good bedtime story, fluff up the cool side of your pillow and tune in to Sleepy. Unless you're driving, then please don't listen to Sleepy. Find Sleepy wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Sunday. Sweet dreams.
Folks, this is Tal Tamari behind me now, and this episode is called Out of My Hands. In a little bit, we're going to hear from a favorite of the show, Robin Gelfenbein. But first, a story that was shared in my online storytelling workshop. This was another beautiful, wonderful group that just wrapped up, and I was so moved the night that John Rappaport shared the story you're about to hear. So this recording is actually from the workshop Zoom session itself. You can't hear the rest of the class. You'll just hear John telling the story to the rest of the class. But my goodness, it was John's first draft of this story. So I had to convince him, oh my God, no, I loved that telling so much. Even though it was just a first draft, I just found it so compelling. I asked if we could just run it as is. So here is John Rappaport with a story we call Protector.
Thank you.
So I've always said I'd die for my kids. And if you ask anyone who knows me, they'll tell you that that's true. But there's a difference between saying something and knowing it. Would I really throw myself toward danger for my children? Well, last year I got my answer and something else I never expected. Now, just a little background. My wife, Danielle, and I, we have three kids, a 16-year-old son who's on his way out the door, and we have fraternal twin, now 12-year-old daughters. And the girls could not be more different. Reese is sly, athletic, soft-spoken, terrifyingly sharp, sweet as sugar until she quietly steals your lunch money when you're not looking. Mila is pure tempest in a teapot. Loud, creative, musical, big emotions, door slams, courtroom-style arguments. I will never love you again. That kind of person. So completely different operating systems, if you will, but wonderfully inseparable. Now, I've worked from home since the girls were born, literally. I lost my job the day before they arrived. Danielle went into labor before I even had the first chance to think about what would come next. So somewhere between panic and adrenaline, and literally between the epidural and their delivery, I started my own consulting business 13 years ago from the hospital. Most people start businesses chasing freedom. I started it really because I wanted proximity. I wanted to be there for the walks to school, for the games, for the random stories after class. And I was, and I have, and I do. But that one day comes as a parent when you realize they don't need you in quite the same way anymore. You spend years teaching your kids to spread their wings, and then one day they do, and it hits you hard. And in this case, they ask you if they can go to the mall without you.
Mm.
Last year, the girls had been begging us for some time to let them go to the mall on their own for the first time. Old Orchard is a suburban outdoor mall, which is funny for the Chicago area because it is an outdoor mall year-round, despite the winter. And it's just a few minutes from our house. So by this age, the girls had phones. They were going with friends, and we have rules for checking in. Still, letting them go felt pretty enormous. But they've matured. We trusted them. We let them go with our blessing and without too much concern. That afternoon, I was downstairs here, where I am right now, in my home office, on a Zoom call with a prospective client. My ring light on, professional voice, listening intently. My wife, Danielle, was upstairs working from our bedroom. And we have an unwritten rule in our house. I don't burst into her workspace, despite it being my bedroom. She doesn't burst into mine. We text if we need to be in touch with one another about anything. But that day, Danielle came flying downstairs and busted open my office door without knocking. And instantly, I knew something was not right. She didn't wait for me to go on mute. She just said, the girls just texted me. There's an active shooter at the mall.
Oh, gosh.
They're hiding in Macy's. What do we do? Once again, in a very different way, adrenaline reared its strange head for me. In that moment, there's no transition. One second, you're discussing strategic communication frameworks on Zoom. And the next second, your nervous system takes over and your consciousness is just along for the ride. I don't remember ending the meeting. I just remember moving. It was 2:49 p.m. I jumped in the car and I exited the alley behind our house and detached garage like a bat out of hell. My phone opened to a text thread between Danielle, the girls, and me. At 2:50, as I was speeding my way there, Danielle wrote, "Dad is on his way to the mall." Reese wrote, "No. Danielle. He will go to the parking lot. If it's locked down, he will stay there." Mila, "No, no." Danielle, "Why?" Me, "Where are you?" Mila, "It's fine. We are safe in a locked room with adults who are taking care of us." Reese, "Dad, no." Mila, "Please, I don't want you to get hurt." Reese, "No, you shouldn't. I think they found a shot person. Please, no, it's not safe for you to come or for us to leave. Please just don't, Dad." Danielle, "He will stay in the car." "My ass, I'll stay in the car," I said out loud to nobody in particular as I sped there. I was in flip-flops. I was swerving around traffic, half on autopilot, half completely feral. At one intersection, I swung into the empty oncoming lane to bypass a line of waiting cars, hoping to go straight through a light so I could make it to the left, the green arrow. I was texting while driving, and I didn't care. 2:54, I wrote, "You stay safe with adults and I will be safe, but keep texting every few minutes." And both Reese and Mila at the same time, "Okay." At 2:57, I pulled into the mall parking lot. There were hundreds of emergency vehicles surrounding the Nordstrom side of the mall. I parked on the other side near Macy's, where the girls told me they were hiding in a locked room on the opposite end. The parking lot of the mall was a ghost town, this enormous suburban shopping center suddenly deprived of life. 2:58, Mila texted, "People just heard gunshots nearby. We are fine." Reese wrote, "Police here, not in here, but all over the mall." Mila, "Tell us when you get there." Reese, "Are you here, Dad?" I started running in my flip-flops. It's all I could hear were the sound of my flip-flops. I ran in toward Macy's. I actually made it to the back door of the department store, grabbed that door handle, jiggled it, locked. Of course it was locked. And suddenly I had this flash of awareness. What the hell am I doing? I'm a random middle-aged man who just ran into the mall trying to force open the doors of a department store during an active shooter lockdown. This is exactly how people are going to get shot by police. And almost on cue, I heard someone yell. I turned and there was this enormous police officer right out of central casting, tactical gear with a long gun pointed in my direction. Sunglasses, mustache, the whole get up. And all I could say was, "My daughters." And he screamed, "Get back. Get the hell out of here." I didn't need to be told twice. I headed back in the direction I came toward the parking lot, despondent, angry, scared, a really strange mix of feelings. 3:02, "Reese, we're going to be outside shortly," says the store manager. I wrote, "You tell me where you are when they let you out." Mila wrote, "Okay, we are probably going to run." And images from the news that we've all seen of kids running away from active shooting scenes just riddled my mind's eye as the pit in my stomach deepened. Reese wrote, "Go to Uncle Julio's. Sophie's dad is there." At 3:04, out of breath, I reached Uncle Julio's, a Mexican restaurant also on the opposite side from where all the emergency vehicles were, and I ran right into Nick, Sophie's dad, who was one of the friends that the girls were with. And a restaurant entryway full of shell-shocked parents and shoppers, the manager invited us in, told us to stay there. We would be safe. Everyone was on their phones, typing furiously, trying to sound calm for whoever it was on the other end that they were messaging with. There was this weird smell of fresh tortilla chips being baked. The TVs on the bar at the restaurant were on ESPN. The world was just moving on. Didn't the world know what was happening right here, right now? 10 more minutes passed. It felt like 10 hours. 3:14, I texted the girls, "Are they telling you anything?" Reese, "Nope. The last thing was the manager talked to the police and he told us that we are going to leave soon." Another few minutes passed. Texts continuing to fly back and forth. "Are you okay?" "Yes, a little scared." "That's okay. You will be okay. It's okay to be scared." Another 10 minutes passed. 3:24, Mila texted me, "We are going now." Reese said, "At the same time, we are set to go. Come." And I wrote, "Where? Macy's?" Reese wrote, "Yes." Mila said, "By Shake Shack." Danielle and I texted then at the exact same moment. I wrote, "Stay there until I get there." Danielle wrote, "Stay inside Macy's until Dad gets there." I hurried back toward Macy's with Nick and several other parents. By then, word had started spreading. There was no active shooter. The people had gotten into an argument in Nordstrom, and someone had allegedly flashed a gun. There were no shots fired, no injuries. But in the fog of panic, the fog of war, you know, partial information turns into certainty, and certainty spreads faster than the truth. At 3:26, the doors opened, and everyone streamed out. Not just Macy's, every single store. They had a protocol, which is a sad testament to the world we live in today, but every store had locked down and put people in the back in storerooms and places. There was a lot of crying and hugging and shaking. When I practiced this, by the way, guys, I did not have this reaction, so forgive me. I saw them. They came running toward me. Stoic, no tears, big hugs, no tears. After a minute of reunion, saying goodbye to Nick and Sophie, we walked back toward the car, holding our hands tightly. At 3:28, Danielle texted, "Are you guys together? What's going on?" As I started the car, Reese and Mila texted her simultaneously, "Yes, we're in the car. We are in the car." 5 minutes later, 44 minutes after I'd run out of the house, we were home. Danielle met us at the garage door. There were more hugs, the four of us together. "We were safe the whole time," Mom and Reese said. "You guys are so brave," Danielle said. "You must have been so scared." "A little," Mila said. "The people were very nice." Then Reese said quietly, "Dad, we were so scared you'd get shot." And that broke me, breaking me now. I walked into another room, I shut the door, and I lost it. Ugly crying. I know I'm now. Because the gravity wasn't really about the mall. It was about understanding in that one terrifying hour that there will be moments in my children's lives when I can't fully protect them anymore. No matter how badly I want to, no matter how fast I drive, no matter how hard I run, no matter how willing I am to throw myself there toward danger, they're slowly becoming people who move through the world beyond my reach. But what has stayed with me most, what I never expected, is that while I was racing toward danger for them, they were trying to protect me. "Please don't come, Dad. I don't want you to get hurt." I'd always said I'd die for my kids. That day confirmed it without question. But what I wasn't prepared for was realizing that they'd grown old enough to fear losing me too. I'd still die for my kids. I'd just rather be a very long time from now. Thanks, guys. I did not expect that to happen. That's my story.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
From Christopher Nolan.
Promise me you will come back.
What if I can't?
This Friday.
Get your weapons ready!
The epic arrives.
No one could stand between me and Holmes.
Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, Robert Pattinson, Lupita Nyong'o, with Zendaya and Charlize Theron.
Let's go!
The Odyssey, in cinemas Friday. Book tickets now.
Abercrombie is here for the height of summer, with key pieces made for the days that don't slow down. The Dylan dress makes getting out the door feel easy from the start, while the Sloan tailored pant brings a more polished feel for work plans and then happy hour. And for all the moments in between or after, matching sets and everyday denim make putting together an outfit feel effortless. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop Abercrombie in the app, online, and in stores.
This is Risk. This is Musical Mandalas. Musical Mandalas behind me now. And we just heard from John Rappaport. We were actually listening to the audio of the Zoom session where he first shared that story for my online storytelling workshop. And folks, the next ones start on September 2nd. That one will meet on Wednesday evenings from 8:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And Another one will be starting on September 13th. That will meet on Sunday mornings from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn how you could jump in on one of those workshops. Next up, a story from our longtime friend, Robin Gelfenbein. Now, the first time Robin appeared on Risk back in 2010, she sounded an awful lot like this.
Woohoo! Yippee-ki-yay! Brown cowboy, yee-haw! Oh, it is hotter than a goat's butt at a pepper patch. Oh, I am schwitzen like a chaza.
But she sure as shit ain't gonna sound like that on this episode. See for yourself. Here's Robin at the Risk Live show at Caveat in New York just a couple weeks ago. Go. With a story we call Passing It On. Or just Passing It On. You could pronounce it like that also.
Okay, so about 7 years ago, I am sitting at the St. Louis airport, and I have just come from this work meeting. I'm feeling really good because we got to meet in person. And by the way, this is pre-COVID. But now I am really dreading coming back to New York. My boyfriend and I have just broken up, so now my nights are spent just like downing a pint or two of Ben and Jerry's, watching Colbert. I miss him. And my days are spent just working from home. And if I'm lucky, the most meaningful conversation I have is with my UPS driver, George. So I'm sitting at the airport, I'm looking around at everybody, and everybody's heads are just like buried in their phones. And I get it. That's the world we live in now. But I also really miss what used to be, when people would strike up conversations with strangers a lot more. So I get on the plane, I take my seat, and I just start jotting down some notes in this notebook, and I get an idea. So at the top of my notebook, I flip the page, and I write, "Let's create a story together." And you can write as much or as little as you want. My name is Robin Gelfenbein. And so the passengers, if they wanted to look me up, could be like, who is this nut job circulating this notebook? And I said, I'm in seat 10C. Once this notebook reaches the back of the plane, please return it to my seat. And my hope is that I can read the story that we create together over the PA. Now, I know that's out of, like, it's bananas, but I dream big. So, and then I wrote, the whole point of this is to have fun. And now I am like, how is this gonna happen? Like, you wrote it, but now you have to let go of it. That's a very, very hard thing for me. I am usually the person like at the water slide that is forming an enormous line because everybody's waiting to just like push me down the water slide. So I cannot let go. I'm usually like, okay, I got it. So I am just like really, really nervous. And I look at the man sitting next to me and I'm just like, get out of your head, Gelfenbein. And I said, hi, I'm Robin. I've never done this before, but and explain what I'm doing. And he looks at me, and then he looks at the notebook, and he looks at me again. And I realize English is not his first language. So I was like, oh shoot, this is gonna be a little trickier than I expected. So I keep explaining what it is, and then I just write, once upon a time there was a woman who, I was like, I gotta kick this thing off somehow. So I hand it to him, and he looks down and he jots something down. And then he hands the notebook back and he goes, is this okay? And I said, meanwhile, I'm like, you could write anything. I was like, yeah, that's great. And he goes, this is really nice. And I said, oh, thank you so much. Would you mind just passing it over to the woman across the way from us? Now, the way that the airplane was set up was there were like two seats for the row on the right and then just one seat for the row on the left. It was a really small plane, like maybe 45 or 50 passengers. Now, the woman across the aisle from us is hunched over her laptop. She is like hitting all the keys with like so much force. She is busy. And I said, can you just pass it over to her? And he goes, I'd rather not. And I was like, I don't blame you. So now I'm like, oh God. So I lean over him. I said, excuse me, I'm really sorry to bother you. And she's like, what? And I'm like, oh God. And I said, I explain what I'm doing. And she looks at me and she looks down at the notebook and she kind of gives me this scowl and like just snatches the notebook out of my hand. And I was like, is she gonna light it on fire? And she like scribbles something down and like hands it back, doesn't even look at me. And I said, do you mind just passing it to the person in front of you? And she's like, no. I'm like, okay. Okay. So now I'm like, God, am I gonna have to like babysit this thing around the plane? Like, oh, this is gonna take forever. You know, I'm like gonna go like row to row. Like, hi, I'm Robin, explain what I'm doing. Like, while you fill that out, can I take your trash? You know, how was your flight? You know, and so I was just like, this is not the point. Like, the point is to let go. So now I'm like looking at the people in front of me who, you know, you can't really see. They're in the seats in front of you. So I sit there and I'm like, looking in between the seats, I go, psst. Psst. And this young woman just turns around like, I tell her my name, tell her what I'm doing. And she goes, that sounds like so much fun. I was like, my people. So I give it to her and then she hands it back. I'm like, can you just, you know, like all casually, can you just pass it on to the next person? And she's like, oh yeah, totally. So she does. And I watch it because I can't help myself. And then I'm like, I can't stand here watching this whole time. People are going to be like, who is this suspicious passenger? Like, I'm like the, like, see something, say something person all of a sudden on the plane, you know? Plus, there is this, there's only one flight attendant. And I don't, as crazy as this sounds, I actually don't want to draw attention to what I'm doing. So, so I sit down and I do my best to write and take my focus off of this like kind of crazy thing that I've just sort of launched. Meanwhile, I'm like, I may never see this notebook again. You know, it could come back with like penis drawings. I can never see it again. I don't know what's going to happen to it. And so like 45 minutes pass. I'm like, where is the notebook? And I'm like, oh, you know, we still have like another hour on this plane. I need to get it back, you know, and I want to be able to read it. Like, I'm just trying to control everything. So then like an hour passes. I'm like, shoot, where's the notebook? And I like sort of like pick my head up every so often, like this whack-a-mole, like trying to find where the notebook is. And finally I was just like, just let it go, Robin. And so I keep, you know, just like doing my work. And about an hour and a half later, I hear, I already did it. Clickety clack, lady. And I was like, oh my God. I'm like, oh my God, the notebook's back. And so I like snatch it out of her hand. I like don't even have time to like read it because I was just like, oh my God, we're gonna land in like half an hour. And so now I'm like, moment of truth. So I run to the front of the plane and I introduce myself to the one flight attendant. His name is Valentino. I said, hi, I'm Robin. Explain what I'm doing. I was like, do you want to do it? And he's like, no. And and I said, I was like, so would it be possible if I read this over the PA? It's just this little story we all created on the plane. And he was like, what? And I said, yeah, I just figured, you know, we just did it together. I wanted us all to enjoy it together. And I'm thinking he's like going to be like, it's against FAA regulations. Are you out of your fucking mind? And he goes, well, how long is it going to take? I go, I don't know, like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, shut up. So he takes his PA and I have like the notebook in my hand and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, there's a woman who wants to read some story you all created together? And I was like, thanks, Valentino. And so I get up there. I'm like, hi, everybody. I'm Robin. I'm the woman from seat 10C. And I'm holding onto the notebook. And I am just like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is actually happening. And so he hands me this PA. The PA is from, like, the 60s. It has, like a 1960s sort of like phone cradle, and in the middle is this button you press in order for the mic to start working. So I'm holding that, holding the notebook, and like we're hitting a little bit of turbulence, and because of course we are. So I'm like bouncing, trying to read the story, and then I hear it's feedback from the PA. And so Valentino's like, please have a seat. I was like, no, I gotta be with the peeps, come on. So I read the story, and I brought it. I don't know all the author's names, but okay, so here's how it goes. Once upon a time, there was a woman who had lunch in the park. She was on vacation. This was the first vacation she had ever taken. That last line was from Clickety Clack Lady. I'm like, she's awfully pleasant on the page. Okay, then it moves on, and she was looking for the best meatball sub in America. Her first stop was New York. Then we took like a little bit of a detour. This woman writes, I've rarely flown, but getting on this small plane has been unexpectedly okay. Hope to make it back to St. Louis. And I was like, does she think this is like a journal entry or some sort of like bonding thing that happens on airplanes now? I don't know. So then the next person writes, I'm not sure New York City is the best place for great meatballs. Certainly meatheads. I'm like, waka, waka, waka. She hopped in a cab, went down to Little Italy, ends up in a parade, and then she meets somebody from Mars who is disguising himself as a fellow human. Little did people know he had blue blood running through his veins and a cure for all the terrible diseases plaguing planet Earth. He asked her if she would go with him to watch a Broadway show. She said she would if he would donate some of his blue blood and get her a meatball sub. The Martian had a weird feeling that he never experienced before. The feeling of knowing this lady for years, whereas she was a complete stranger. Was it what humans call love? Give it up for American Airlines Flight 735. Your response was much greater than the one I got on the flight. Then I hear, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be landing this plane shortly. And I was like, oh, the pilots waited for the story to end. They needed to know what happened. I was like, oh my God. Oh, this is so cool. So I head back to my seat, and this man stops me, and he says, I wrote the part about the Martian. I was like, I love that part. And then this woman stops me, and she goes, I wrote the part about the meatball sub. I was like, oh, I love how the meatball sub came back at the end. And she's like, yeah, me too. And then this guy stops me, and probably like late 20s or something, and he says, Robin, I had such a hard week at work. All I wanted to do was get on this flight, have a drink, and just conk out. But then I got your notebook, and it completely restored my faith in humanity. And I wanted to leap into this guy's arms. And not just because he was incredibly hot. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. So I head back to my seat, and the man sitting next to me and then the guy behind me both asked me for my email, because unbeknownst to me, they had recorded and taken pictures of what I had done at the front of the plane. And I was like, maybe cell phones aren't so bad. So I take my seat, and I look out the window, and I am overcome with emotion. People felt seen. People felt heard. And in this really weird way, we all connected. And as we touched down at LaGuardia, I'm feeling a little bit better about going home, because those people on that flight completely restored my faith in humanity, too. Thank you. Robin Gelbenbahn. Yes. I love that story because I too love playing with strangers. And you do have to be mindful of what you do out in public these days because you never know, you know, how you might reconnect with those people. All I will say about this is that I watched a TikTok video that said that on airplanes, there's things that go on with the air pressure that push a lot of gas out of people's butts. And all I will say is I find that to be true. And so every time I'm on a flight, I'm a little nervous about that aspect of flying. And one time I was on a flight to L.A., and I said hello to the woman next to me, and we had a nice little chit-chat. And then we had the whole flight, and the TikTok video was true. And then I happened to be in like a viral street interview video with my dog, and that video got like 7 million views. And one of the commenters on that video was the woman who had been sitting next to me on the plane. And I was like, oh God, what's she going to say about me? Because that TikTok video is true. But she just said like, oh, I met this woman on my plane flight the other day. My plane flight. Nobody says that. My aeroplane aero voyage the other day. And she was very nice. And I'm like, oh God, thank you. She didn't say anything about what the TikTok video says is very true in my life. But then that wasn't the weirdest thing. I have run into Karen, the woman who was sitting next to me on the plane, like 6 times. Everywhere I go, she just pops up. She's probably here tonight. Karen, are you here tonight? But like I run into her on the Upper West Side. I run into her in Midtown. I run into her in Brooklyn. I run into her everywhere. And like, you know, I go to the gynecologist and she's like, I'll be checking you out today. I'm like, Karen, what the fuck? You know, but she's everywhere. And so, you know, what if I had been a bitch to Karen, you know? And we all know you don't be a bitch to a Karen, you know, or you run into some trouble, right? So yeah, just as you're playing with people out there, definitely play, but just be mindful because you might see them over and over and over and over again without realizing it'll happen. But that is our show for this evening. So thank you so much, everybody, and good night.
Risk. This is Simon Osterhold behind me now, and we just heard from JC Cassis, our business director, who was hosting the Risk Live show in New York, where Robin Gelfenbein told that story. You can find Robin on Instagram at robin.gelfenbein. You can find JC on Instagram at jc.cassis. Thank you so much to Hope Brush for directing this episode, Taj Easton for editing this episode, Cindy Freeman for casting that latest Risk Live show, and John LaSala for overseeing the whole production end of the podcast. We've been hurting a bit because we miss our buddy Jeff Barr, our episode editor throughout almost the whole history of the show. But we're soon going to be doing an episode that's an homage to Jeff, and it just might include a story about the time that Jeff and I did mushrooms together, and I very nearly lost my grip on this side of sanity. Or maybe I did. Maybe I did, and I'm still in denial. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.